I think it'd be neat though, as a creative person, to just hear perspectives. Nothing else, you know. It's not. There's not a wrong answer or a right answer. Just to give you an idea, I really feel that creativity is an attribute of God. That part of being created in God's image. I mean, He created the world. He is obviously the most creative person, infinitely creative in the universe, outside of the universe. And it just boggles my imagination that as much as I could imagine about God, He's that much more. He keeps going on forever. So that gives me a lot to think about, a lot. Creativity seems to be, and I only know my perspective, so it might be kind of narrow, but I'd like to think that there's a certain attribute of God called creativity in every person that, whether or not it's acknowledged or utilized, that it's there, like a little spark. And if we fan the flame, or even pray.
I found for me that reading and especially listening to poetry, a number of years back, I got interested in, you know, the early 90s.
Uh-huh.
And I listened to a lot of tapes, like readings of Kabir and Rumi and those kind of things that so deep and they flow, you know. And then pretty soon I got in a poetry frame of mind.
Uh-huh.
And I found I was just sort of thinking in this kind of rhyme and flow.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started writing.
Excellent.
You know,
finding
a quiet place and a quiet time when I just felt like I had a lot of thoughts that I've been working on, and I was able to just sit down and put them into a poem.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
But and then I kind of got away from that, and I find that, you know, if there's something really meaningful and I want to spend some time with it, develop it, and that's where I seem to go. I seem to go into writing it, and I have kind of a style that has a little rhyme to it, and and I think, oh, this isn't very good, but yet I like it, so I have to honor that and say, well, this is just my style. This is, you know, I haven't been trained or anything. This is just what comes out of me, so I write it down, you know, and I enjoy it. So, and then that sometimes other people read it and they say, hey, that's pretty cool.
Excellent.
So I get a few strokes once in a while like that.
Right on.
But I don't spend enough time doing it, I don't think.
You know, that's one of the things that I hear the most. And I myself am guilty of that from time to time. That, you know, people, they really enjoy it. It's healthy, it's therapeutic even. But then if they don't take the time. I kind of sometimes use that as an analogy for spending time with God. Because at least for me, I find that I'm most creative when I sacrifice time for God. I mean, when I just get on the floor and pray or get into the Word and study God's Word, talk to Him, listen to Him, think thoughts about God, that stirs up that fire inside of me. And it also, of course, stirs up a fire, you know, to live for God. But as far as a creative person, it's certainly, I think, very closely tied. I can tell we can have some good discussion. How about so you guys don't start thinking that there's not going to be any poetry? You can go ahead and roll the tape.
Okay.
Just to give a little bit of a background on myself, my name is Craig Morrison, and I grew up in Western Washington on a little almost farm, and I was certainly creative, but it was definitely I found creative ways to get in trouble. I found creative ways to rebel and to outwit the system. And when I was about 18 or 17, I began writing, but it was definitely, I would have to say, a very immature perspective. Not that I've really come very far, but I'd have to say I've come at least to Jesus, and he's done a lot since then. When I was about 21, I started, it's about 4 years ago, I'm 25 now, I started in Seattle. I was living there and I started attending poetry slams, which, if you don't know, they're really obnoxious. They're set in a bar, and it's a contest between poets where drunk judges from the audience judge poetry that could be wonderfully beautiful pieces, and if they're not sensational and raunchy, then they don't succeed very well. And it kind of changed my writing style to the point over about a year that I almost quit writing, and I was very discouraged because that was the only poetry that I saw. I wasn't reading the classics, and I would recommend it, but I still haven't read much. Dr. Seuss is my main influence. Shel Silverstein, I write like a little Robert Frost, Richard Brautigan, but so I wasn't really getting a lot of that. The only thing I say, I guess, that I benefited from that was I developed a keen sense of confidence with what I was able to write, with the performance style, which I do feel is important. I've had many people come up and tell me, you know, you can go on the radio, blah, blah, blah. It's just because I'm really comfortable with my writing, and you'll see. So after that, a couple years later, about 2 or 3 years ago, Jesus found me, or I found him, and there was wonderful things going on with that. I would say the writing, it was still just kind of doing what it was doing until about 6 months ago, when I finally realized, wait a second, I'm expressing myself, but I'm not really expressing this whole aspect of my life, my Christian walk. And God kind of put that on my heart, and it became really important to me, but not in a sense like urgency, like I have to force myself. It just kind of came out. 3 months ago, or maybe 4 months ago now, God told me to start a Christian poets group, a Christian writers group in North Carolina, where I was only going to be living for a few months, but for some reason he did it. And I called it Risen from the Dead Poet Society, and we took off, and they came out of nowhere from every denomination, and all they had to do was love Jesus and be creative. And that's still going strong in Raleigh. I hope to visit it sometime. But anyway, he's really been, in the last few months, bringing out of me a lot of things, writing about ironies in the Bible and just intimate praises of God and different things, along with other humorous things. So that's me in a nutshell. I'm going to read. And how many of you guys were here on Wednesday on the Ark? Okay. I don't think I would repeat much, but I just wanted to know, you know, because I don't want to like...
That's fine if you do.
All right. Boy, what's a good one to start off with? I'm going to start off with Jesus Withered My Dinner. This was written in May of this year, and it's one of those from the Christian Writers Group. We kind of threw out ideas at the end of every writing thing, at the end of every meeting, and this one came out of that. And it kind of maybe answers the question of that little paragraph in some of the Gospels where Jesus just walks along and withers this fig tree, and it doesn't really explain why. So here it is. Jesus withered my dinner. I could have sworn there was a fig tree here, right here, yesterday. It's really very strange. Every day for the last 10 years I've walked this road, and there's always been a fig tree right here. Now there's nothing but a tangly withered shrub, a gangly goat scrub. I just don't understand. But I remember those figs. Ooh, those luscious figs. I'd stop here in the shade and pop a few succulent fruits into my mouth. Mmm. They melted on the tongue. Why, it seemed like yesterday they tasted especially good. As if every fig were my first ever. Oh, what joy. Each one better than the last. Until, I'm sure I couldn't have eaten them all. Well, maybe I did feel a little bloated walking down the road as I passed those 13 scraggly men going the other direction. But even if I did eat all the fruit, they were the most delicious figs I'll ever taste. The hand of God couldn't have picked a finer fig yesterday. Yet I could have sworn that tree was right here. If you guys, if you guys have feedback or comments, questions on any of these as I go along, please just speak right out, because that's what I'm used to in this poetry group. We would just bat around entire phrases and stuff. So
I call that imagination. Imagining the background of what Jesus is doing. Mm-hmm. You know, imagining, and heck, maybe that is why that fruit was barren. That's
good. It's definitely a stretch. I wouldn't call it scripture.
Just imagination.
I thought it was beautifully written, and you expressed it. You know, just great. Mm-hmm. I didn't really associate it so much with poetry. It's just a great storyline, you know, mm-hmm. to be told. So is that? We'll hear some of the other things, but is that your style, or do you
that one was more of an experiment. I'm used to writing in verse, but I do appreciate other styles. That one almost seems more of a monologue to me. Mm-hmm. Which I do a little theater, so if I ever need a monologue, I'll just use that. You guys want to hear another one? Mm-hmm. Or is there any other comments on that? Okay, there's no limits to this, just speak your mind. This is called The Brig, and this came around the day after Christmas of last year. And I think we were praying in a Bible study one night, and some people saw a picture of a guy in the bottom of a ship chained up, and it was the old nature, like the sin nature. And so this just kind of, I chewed on that for a month or two, and then it's just kind of bloop on the page. The Brig. The prisoner sleeps the night away, terrified. Even asleep, he has something to say, full of pride. He stirs and moans in the deepest hold, getting up, angrily rattling his heavy chains, not letting up. He used to be captain of this ship, so fortified, till the breath of life blew in its sails, he mortified. Wrestling, he was bested by the new creature, forced in the brig, a captive of the good teacher. Yet still can his hollow directives be heard, corruptive, every idle wayward word disruptive. His vile mocking sends the whole ship wavering, and every sidetrack moment is he savoring. The old nature is not in charge, no question, but not beyond the power of suggestion. sometimes I have to let those sink in, even myself. But,
maybe that's true, but you are very understandable. We know what you're, at least I have an idea of what you're trying to get across, and maybe my idea is different than somebody else's, but you're not so vague that it's...
Yes, thank you.
You have to dig for the message.
Only rarely do I do cryptic poetry. It's hard for me to sit through a reading like that, and I'll hear one line like, "The jewel in the furnace stokes my inner being as philosophy intertwines and drips out my ears." And I'm like, okay, you know, and that's all I hear for the next 5 minutes. I'm thinking about that. So yeah, it's hard for me to really write like that because I don't want to lose an audience. Hey, this is a good one. This is, "Music is Life is Poetry." It was written in January of 97, so that's a good year and a half. And this is... Music is a big part of my life. It just... Other people's music goes into my heart. It dictates the way I feel. I try not to let it really adversely affect me in a negative way if it's not good music that I like, but... there's definitely... This poem is about trying to just appreciate everything as music. "Music is life is poetry." "Music is life is poetry, and all that is in between, from the thunderous rhythm of the atom bomb to a garden so quiet, serene. That feeling you get as you wake with a thought so funny you sit up and bellow. Music is sun shining through the leaves of a forest in autumn yellow. It's the orchestra of the ocean and the waves and their motion as the tides play the tune of the moon. From the egg to larva to pupa is music and the cracking of a cocoon. The high-pitched snaps of countless mouse traps, the hissing haze of cockroach sprays, the telemetry of a star in collapse as it reaches the end of its days. Music is life is poetry, and all that that contains, from the industrial chorus of factory sound to the pounding desolate desert rains. From the mighty Baroque with its harmonies to the recluse renaissance of the wind in the trees, it's the crickets chirping, bullfrogs croaking, babies burping, and fires stoking. Music is life is poetry, and all that shall remain is to be aware of the music inside, the song of the eternal plain." And you notice there's slight hints at spiritual things, but I wasn't about to call on the name of the Lord Jesus Christ for certain. I was just a scaredy cat, especially as a writer. It was pretty funny. This one, I'm going to go ahead and read it. I read it on Wednesday, but I really like it. I used to, at the beginning of, a couple years ago, I wrote it when I was just first seeking, and I called it "Intangible Concept," and it was about God, but I just didn't know what God was. I rewrote it a little bit a few months ago and renamed it God, rightly so. "He stares me in the face, taps me on the shoulder, swallows empty space. He's in the eye, beholder. Not only seen with the naked eye, nor heard with the ears alone, but with every wisp of breath inhaled, so vibrant, rich, detailed. The realm of the senses couldn't compare. He colors the heartscapes everywhere. His is the laughter I hear on the breeze. It brings me to my knees. He jaywalks across the path to wisdom as all sorrow from my countenance flees. The Lord my God is profoundly light. He transcends himself out of sight." What do you think? Fantastic. Are you feeling creative yet?
No, but you sure are.
So tell us about your process.
You know, that's a good question. Sometimes I get an idea, and I work it out. I read one the other night called The Tale of the Onion Soldier, and it's this semi-epic poem of these onion people, and they're in a famine, and this guy comes on a horse and gives them the seeds to grow onions, and I had this whole story written, and then I was in the shower like 2 days later, and I didn't feel like the poem was done, and it just hit me, boom! And the crux of the poem became that the onion soldier got it wrong, and that the onion was actually supposed to be union. And he had spread it around as onions instead of union, because he was supposed to be bringing union to all the people. And it works in the poem very well, I think, but that wasn't the original intention. I just liked the title, The Tale of the Onion Soldier, because it played off on The Tale of the Unknown Soldier. Another fun one I might even read today called Funhouse. I got the first line, there's laughter in the rafters, afterthoughts are on the roof. And I think I woke up one morning with that and just wouldn't get out of bed until I had gotten all the stuff out. That was like 4 or 5 years ago. And it just kind of happened. And it's rare that I laboriously trudge through something. It doesn't work for me. Not much of that stuff has made it into here. I mean, there's notebooks with that stuff in it, but it doesn't feel the same. There's some mix formula between intake of new experiences, appreciation of beauty, 8 hours of sleep, and staying close to God. I haven't figured out all the different levels, but somewhere there's a window in there that when all those are right, then it just kind of flows. Probably a little bit of trial. Add a little trial in there too, because it always takes some kind of poke in the back, you know, to get you going.
But there would not be a that you had seen a circus poster someplace with acrobats.
No, it's funny. No. Sometimes, I mean, I have a poem about a river that I wrote next to a river, and I, you know, I wrote a poem about loneliness because I had a roommate that, it was called What Hell Must Be Like, and I had a roommate that wasn't a Christian and he just wasn't very happy. So there's definitely, I draw inspiration from my life, but there's things, I'll read one that, this I wrote on an airplane. I woke up with the words, the sturdy, hurdy, gurdy. And I thought, now what on earth? I can't do anything with that. You know, God, what are you giving me here? And this is just fun words to throw together. But if I remember correctly, a hurdy-gurdy was one of those things that they, with the monkey, you know, and the organ grinder. And it inspired a piece called Under the Big Top. It's funny you mention that. With full circus regalia. And I haven't been to a circus in years, and I never saw an organ grinder. But it just, you tell me what you, I've never done this before. I do readings, but not this relaxed. I would really appreciate you guys. Under the Big Top. The sturdy hurdy-gurdy's revolutions add confusion to the organ grinder's grinding, winding ever on and on. The monkey is his flunky, with a cymbal in each very nimble hand on which it stands, clinging ceaseless thereupon. The flowing cotton candy's knowing, time is near to disappear. A muscle wet and pink helps its hopes of life to sink. With resolve it dissolves down the sticky smile of a riled child reconciled to fun. The clowns they dance around, prance the grounds and making faces, taking roses from their vases, juggling noses in the sun. The bearded lady's shady stubble sprouting on the double earns her ticket and right to picket the barber who harbors no trouble. The quilted men on stilts are built beside the gilded ride, right outside the roller coaster, just above the hot dog roaster. Energetic weedy boaster, tipsy toaster, full of pride. May the circus never work us after laughter leaves the big top, and the feeling that we capture be a rapture undenied.
You don't have to go to the circus. You've got it inside.
I guess there's a circus inside me. I don't know yet.
I sure see it.
I felt a little that you had been influenced by Dr. Seuss in that rhyme. Mm-hmm. A little bit. I mean, I could see that. Mm-hmm. Only because you had said that. A little bit.
I guess if there's anything that I really appreciate is words. The way they sound, I guess one of my poet friends from Raleigh said, you have a gift of alliteration. I was like, what is that? I don't know what it means, but I guess it means putting words that rhyme together within a line. I just, like the word blue and glue, you know, I mean, blue, glue. I mean, I just pulled that out of nowhere, but I like the way that sounds, you know, and I would use that. There's just certain, and I don't know, I guess God gave me a certain thing that if I can say what I want to say, but still use words that I like the way they sound together, then I'm going to do that. I think that circus one was probably the most, like just heaping it on and heaping it on, but it just was in the mood. I was going home to flying home for 3 days to see my best friend's wedding, and I was more excited than I'd been in years. And I think that just...
You could almost turn the pages in your mind and see all of those pictures just as you would Dr. Seuss.
I appreciate that, because I often wonder, there's so much in there in each line that some people have said, you know, I didn't get all that.
So it needs illustrated.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he's reading, and he's illustrating it.
Yes. The only thing that I, no, it wasn't that one. It was the muscle. And I didn't understand the muscle until you stuck your tongue out.
Mm-hmm. And yes, I usually try to do that. Because I'm an actor too, I don't know.
Well,
if I could perform these poems, I mean, I would more, you know, more and more. But,
Craig, can you say some more about rhyming and how that your choice of words to make a certain line rhyme, how that dictates where the poem goes? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you have to choose a certain word that rhymes with a line, 2 lines ago,
mm-hmm.
and you only have so many words, how does that influence where the direction of the poem?
I would say it's probably 50%, like half the time I probably have a line that I really like, and what I say in the following stuff is dictated by what's in that line, not likely to be changed. And then the other half the time, I have something that I want to say, and I go back and I look for the best rhyme with it and the line above it.
So you kind of have a goal in mind as you're writing for certain sections of the poem itself, or do you just start off not really knowing?
I don't think I ever really know.
It builds. Does it build?
It definitely, a lot of times I'll start to write something, I'll come up with a line that I like or something, and about halfway through it's just like, wow, that's really cool. And sometimes I scrap everything else and just keep that little gem thing and build around that. But many times, I until I had roommates with computers, I didn't really even edit the stuff. I just kind of, like, some of the, like, the circus one was hardly edited. Mainly a couple words here and there. I just never know. I know that's pretty vague, but...
You don't have a pattern, do you, that you've got four lines to a verse, and then you try to make another four, or you have 50 lines makes your poem, or...
No, in fact, I if I sense that I'm getting into a routine like that, I usually try and...
I usually try and break it.
I'll read you an example of that. This is... it's a poem called Morse, and I was experimenting with a Morse-like rhythm. I don't know Morse code, so I can't... I couldn't write in Morse code, but I used something that might feel like that, and the delivery of it is very seemingly random, and that just, you know, kind of like that. And it kind of fits with the subject material. This was written the same day that I wrote 12/21. It was written Christmas trip. Whenever I travel home to see the folks, I always get very creative. And my folks actually thought that it kind of signified that there was a spiritual theme running underneath it, like the sinking ship. Morse. I guess I should have learned what that little clicking noise meant. All the time it would rat-a-tat like a woodpecker, incessantly clicking. I never listened. Should have paid more attention. Fear, fire, foe, we never did know what that clicking noise meant. Always did admire the random rhythms. I never thought twice. The bomb found its mark. Smoke, incessant woodpecker, won't save our souls. Click, tick, tick, tick tock, like a clock running amok on some ethereal time. No time, sinking fast. Okay, Mom, I will stop tapping. Stop, tap, tapping. Never will stop the tapping. I guess I should have learned what that clicking noise meant.
How would we read that on a page?
On a page, each syllable and word, I love ellipses for some reason. They're my favorite little thing to go dot, dot, dot after a title or a phrase. And there are small dots to indicate a pause, and dot, space, dot, space, dot, space to indicate the end of a phrase or a sentence. So I try and read it pretty close, but then I also take performance liberties where it would be harder to read this, I think. But I would probably include it in some kind of body of work just because it's that out there, experimental. And that would be one that I would love feedback on because I don't have as many avenues for that.
I don't mean this in a critical way. I guess to me it was almost more of a distraction.
Uh-huh.
Just whenever I hear any readings, I listen to the content, of course, but also kind of in the back of my mind,
there's sort of this overriding kind of flow to the words being spoken. And to me, it was hard for me to listen to the actual words you were saying because the incessant pounding of the words you were, you know, that was getting in the way. But that's just me.
What if you heard that again with a different style, like not with that? I want to do that sometimes.
If you'd like to hear it without the Morse code in there, you're welcome to. I've never tried that, but...
Well, you would certainly lose something of the effect, wouldn't you?
I don't know.
Well, what does that mean to you guys? Because as I was writing it, I realized... I mean, what I intended, there's always, you know, once the poem is written, it's up to anybody's, you know, their perspectives. There's a word that I'm looking for, but I can't find it.
Well, I think it's probably just an example that you were willing to try a different style, and you had this idea, and you just did it, and there it is, and, you know.
That's it. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I
picture
if you got a whole book full of that, you know, I might just go, oh God, I can't deal with it.
yeah, I probably would too.
You mean Morse 1 or Morse 2 or Morse 3?
But did you get any of the content?
Yeah.
Oh my, yeah.
I mean, there's a captain of a ship,
and the urgency.
He didn't know Morse code, and he was maybe set in a war or something, and a bomb hit him.
I could see the Titanic.
Okay.
I did too.
Okay.
Just because it's very current.
Uh-huh. But yeah, yeah, maybe it would be more likely for a non-military captain to not know Morse code.
I think you have humor in your writing. I like that. I mean, I think it's...
Thanks.
What
time is church?
What time is it?
5:30 before.
Okay. I guess I don't want to go into Vespers, of course. I'll read a couple more at least. This one is it's a song now, but it's also almost a piece of worship to God. And I share it because I really think it's beautiful, but you guys tell me. It's called I Am, You Are. God, the enigmatic being, ever present, ever seeing, forever loving, always just, in your hands I put my trust. Strange and wondrous are your actions. In you I find satisfaction. A true completeness I have known since you made my heart your own. Your majesty pervades all things. Blissful joy creation sings. Truly you make all things new. Your love flows through all you do. Understanding cannot ponder. Contemplation starts to wander. Wisdom knows that it knows not. You're never grasped, yet ever sought. I am, you truly are. I am, you truly are. Jehovah, Yahweh, never far. I am, you truly are. And I wonder sometimes if the untrained ear would probably think I'm talking about myself, saying I am, you know, but hopefully people realize that's the great I am. I'm just kind of flipping around, seeing what catches my eye. There's another one that I wrote. I love jazz. Do you guys, anybody like jazz? Like the old swing, bop, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Dizzy Gillespie kind of stuff. This was written on John Coltrane's birthday, because on his birthday they always play really good music. And it's kind of a tribute to him. And another one of those experiments out of the regular routine. It's written in a swing tempo. And I've never tried it with music or anything, but the words, hopefully they won't get in your way, Chris, but the words simulate a swing tempo as best that I can do. It's called New Standard. The big fat notes just a slide stepping down all the round like the sound of an elephant's pound. As the fingers a move, how the singer can linger and soothe to the groove as it moves up and down. The voice of choice is the talk of the boys. Her melodious waves, they all behave like narcotic noise. Then the horn is born with the triumphant tone as it's blown gold gleam and blue notes scream. They seem to stand alone. The smoothness of his reed can be read, yes indeed, like the music from his heart or his head. He doesn't need a sheet or a guide to express what's inside. Just the fire of the soul plays a role. Inspiration comes along for the ride. And the drums, here he comes with the cymbal clash, the throb of the tom and the deep bass drum. He smashes and crashes and the flashes and dashes. Snare can be heard everywhere. From ashes he rises like a phoenix. Entices the music once more, and how sweet the score! The crowd off the floor, on its feet just to greet, the arms raised in praise, and a new standard stays. At the end of the song, they're crying encore, and jazz is far richer than ever before.
Awesome. Craig, I think that you said something about you feeling good about yourself, and in a good place. Mm-hmm. Well, you are both a poet and musician and musical and actor. And what you're doing is simply putting all that together. It's more than poetry. It is acting. It is performance. It's part of it. I mean, I could read that and it would be pretty good. I mean, people enjoy the poetry, but the way you read it, it's just a living, breathing thing. I mean, it's you're just more than a poet, you know, and that's the way it ought to be. That's just who you are.
Thanks.
Yeah.
You're combining the talents in a way I think that no one else would be able to look at that and do it like you did. And you're making a living right now as you do it.
Yeah,
it's great.
So we couldn't do it exactly that way because we can read it that way. Well, that's no big deal. Some art is living art.
Yeah. So I guess I'll never be one of those dead poets, but that's okay.
Back in high school, I remember the teacher, we were doing poetry, and I wasn't real big on that stuff in high school, but E.E. Cummings read his poet, and he was strange, if you remember listening to E.E., but it was never the way I would have thought it. Uh-huh. But he read it the way he felt it, and it was really an experience to hear how he, the writer, the poet, experienced it, and he had a strange voice.
You must have gone to a cool high school.
Yeah.
This one is rather. It's written in that, you know, da 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 da, but. It's fun. I don't know. I like the kind of classical feel because it fits the poem. It's called The Time Machine. Tranquil humming, grinding purr, mundane routines that reoccur, marching into ages hence, from past that could not give defense. The time machine borrows from yesterday, sorrows from tomorrow since passed away. Its face stares out from time unknown, the ageless ticking of an endless drone. Arms incessant, revolving around, its circumference never quite touching the ground. It tells of the beast that devours all things, vast appetite and never-ending strings. The time machine's winters and springs and gears reflect the moonlight of countless years. Now and again it is filled with alarm, clutching the hours with its short arm. Numerals of Rome are on its face as it travels forever, not moving through space. The chimes ring on wood and metals, pendulum swinging as the dust never settles. Speaking volumes without having to talk, the time machine, antique grandfather clock.
You'll never be taken for granted. Your styles are so different. you'll just never.
At this point, yeah. You are. But we don't know what you'll be in 20 years.
Yeah, it's.
Who knows?
I kind of figured at middle age I'd sit down and do some children's books or something.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
You're at the age where you should be experimenting. You're absolutely at that place.
You guys want to hear one about God, or do you want to hear one? Ooh, boy. Because I know the time is probably growing. I'll read this one, because I was kind of thinking about this one on the trail the other day. It's called Growth Spurt, and sometimes I write something and move on, and I don't know if I still agree with this, but I think I do. It's about youth, or the illusion thereof. Growth Spurt. The flower of youth, so elusive, on the surface a great decoy, holds the glitter of truth that's exclusive, for youth's really measured in joy. When I was a child, I thought as a child, I spoke as a child, I smoked as a child. But then I became a man and put away childish things. I eagerly sought adulthood, embracing the hardness of heart that it brings. Now I've become a child again by letting adulthood go. The inner child is loving and thankful, and joy makes the countenance glow. It's a transformation we all must endure. Life stages we find will refine and make pure. The age of the body really makes no difference. What counts is the age of the soul. Most people find youth at the end of their lives, if ever they reach their goal. So if anyone tries to convince me that youth is measured in years, they're likely trying to convince themselves to wallow amidst their fears.
Oh.
You're going out on a limb there.
The bird liked it. No, I mean, I liked it, but I just couldn't help but think the bird started chirping, you know.
Oh, you were serious, the bird?
Yeah, he did. He just tuned in. He said, I like this, and he just started singing.
Thanks, bird.
Well, I liked it because we are along in years.
Mm-hmm. And you have a perspective that I can't have for quite a while.
I don't think I'd be here in Holton Village if I was 25. Maybe I would.
Uh-huh.
But... because that was a serious time.
Uh-huh.
And to me, this week's going to be great and fun.
Excellent, excellent. It's probably... I'll read two more if I have time. I don't know, because I don't do time.
7:15.
Okay. Yeah, I'll read two more. Because it's just fun stuff. I don't know.
There's some poem there that you have to work on. You don't do time. What does that mean for you and a boy? I mean, that'd be.
that's a good point.
Wait, sorry.
But you know, I find eternity and time and that whole concept to write on it is to get into that cryptic stuff, because it just. It boggles my mind, and I could think and think and think, and it just it really floors me. This is called Solarian. And this one was another one of those that got the first line, and I just liked it, so I wrote the poem. And that didn't necessarily place me in a greenhouse or anything. The twilight through the skylight, iron pyrite, hues of gold, sends brilliant and resilient beams of color, blithe and bold. The room in flower, illumined shower, a powerful sparkled glaze, humidifies the mist which glistens pristine in the haze. The window sweats and knows no threats of darkness all-pervading. It reflects the insects and directs the light from fading. The butterfly, it mutters why and hears no uttered cry. For it lacks ears, it only fears to gaze upon the sky. The greenhouse, so serene house, home of growth and warming cheer. As dewdrops shine from a cactus spine, I find the divine quite near. Sometimes I read things and it makes me go, that mental note to, you know, get on the computer disk and change it later. But because there's ones that I really like to read to people, and there's ones that I've purposefully not read some of the ones that I always read, because I like to, you know, read some other ones too and get feedback and stuff. Who knows? This one is another one of those monologue ones that came out of the group Risen from the Dead Poets Society, and I thought I'd read it because it's fun. It's called Mouth of Babes. Mommy, today I saw the teacher. I know you said I shouldn't bother him, but I saw him. Why, I even got to sit on his lap. It sure was difficult squeezing through the legs of all those people, but they were so busy trying to crowd in around him, they didn't notice a little kid like me. And I almost got sent away. Ha! A grim-faced man that was with him sent me off, told me to go home. But he sure got what was coming to him. The teacher himself scolded the grim-faced man in front of everyone. Oh, he picked me up and told them that unless they became like me, they wouldn't enter heaven. Mommy, the teacher blessed me. After that, he whispered to me, my child, simply love and abide in me. He said that to me. I know you said I shouldn't bother him, but you should have seen the look on that grim man's face. Mama, this teacher's the nicest person you could ever imagine. I love him, I really do. And he said to be like me.